This is The Edge with Jonathan Von Tobel and Matt Eumanns on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
What up and welcome in. You heard it. It's the usual crew here on a Tuesday, and quite the Tuesday it is. World Series, of course, will get started later today. We'll have plenty of analysis on that coming up in just moments. But we, much like baseball players, love to touch them all. So we're going to have a lot going on here. National Football League, NBA. You like that, huh? That was good. And more.
Did you script that?
No, man. This is all off the top of the dome. I'm pretty good. You know, the writing has really helped me out in terms of getting more creative, you know?
Speaking of the dome, I mean, we had some guys on VSIN today with just fantastic hair. Jason Weingarten, Drew Densick. Did you happen to catch those clips at VSIN Live on Twitter?
All right, so I'm going to make a reference that I think I know you're going to like and appreciate. Weingarten looked like the thing from the Addams Family. Right? Just like all hair?
Okay.
Right? Like this. That was good. That was good. But yes, a lot of nice hair. Mine's getting a little long and a little tall, so I got to go get this snipped down and trimmed up. But other than that, you know, I'm trying to get there.
Well, it's,
you know,
standing up like a big wave in the front.
Yeah, it's getting a little. But if you notice, I'm starting to have to do the thing where it points in the middle because, you know, it's just getting a little too long. So, but I can talk about hair forever. It's one of my great passions. Also, one of my great passions, sports, World Series, championships, all those sort of things. Let's get started. Braves and Astros will get us started in the World Series later this evening. Astros right now, $1.28 favorite, Matt Eumanns, against Charlie Morton and the Braves. Total shaded to the over at -120. It's a total of 8 runs as well. And I know you've said this a couple of times. You were talking about this off the air. Braves series, but not so high on Morton game one?
Yeah, I do like the Braves in the series, but Charlie Morton has not been at his best, let's say, in the playoffs. And that bothers me a little bit when I handicap game one, because I watched Framber Valdez, the lefty for the Astros, in his last start against Red Sox, and he was outstanding. So I'm really not in a big rush to bet against Valdez and the Astros here in game one. I think the price is probably about right. Circa's got 133, Westbrook 130. And South Point -128. So I don't disagree with the price in game one. And I see a series price on the Braves at about +125. That's not enough to make me jump here before the series, JBT. I wouldn't be surprised to see the Braves drop game one, but still come back and win the series. I could get a much better series price if I wait for the result. Now, obviously, there's a downside to that. If you wait and you don't bet the series price and the Braves win tonight, it could get away from you. But I think it'll come back regardless, because I expect this to be a long series. It's going to be 6 or 7 games. VSIN's Ben Wilson does a podcast with the hit king, Pete Rose.
Yeah.
And Pete Rose predicted Braves in 7. You know, I think the Astros are a slightly better offensive team. The Braves got maybe a couple issues in the bullpen. But for some reason, I believe in Freddie Freeman and the Braves. They've had the best record in baseball since the trade deadline. And I'm also pulling for the Braves because they've had so much October frustration since the 1990s.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not like the Astros are some sort of Cinderella story, a cute story, right?
You're talking about fighting through adversity. Fighting through adversity, all the hate, you know.
I don't hate the Astros like a lot of people because they allegedly cheated.
Allegedly, I think it's been confirmed.
Well, you know, did Bill Belichick cheat?
Yes.
Belichick.
Now, I don't blame anybody for cheating.
I still like Bill Belichick. You know, it's like, if you're not cheating, you're not trying hard enough.
Exactly. Yeah. Come on.
So I'm not going to hold that against the ass. I mean, there's been a lot of cheating in baseball over the past 120 years. Are you kidding me?
Of course.
Astros are not the first ones to cheat. So I don't hate the Astros, but I'd like to see the Braves win the series. I'm hoping Freddie Freeman comes up big here, because I would like to see the Braves pull it out. But I don't think it's a situation where you have a huge edge on Atlanta and you're saying, wow, I'm getting a plus price with a better team. No, that's not really the case. I just think the Braves have been playing the best baseball of any team since the 1st of August, and I kind of expect them to do that here through the World Series.
Yep. And I like Valdez. I think your point is a solid one, right? Because Valdez at the beginning of the postseason was a little shaky. 4 1/3 against the White Sox, gave up 4 earned runs. It was his first start out. But since then, had really calmed down. Against Boston, the first time, didn't have a lot of length. He was outing only 64 pitches over 2 2/3, but last time was brilliant in shutting down the Red Sox.
He was as good as I've ever seen him.
8 innings pitched, 1 earned run, not a big strikeout guy, but still struck out 5.
And you wonder, too, I know you would look at it this way, too. Valdez, that's the best start he's had. That's the best start I've ever seen him had. Maybe the best start of his career.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's right up there in the top 3, you would think. Is there going to be regression? Is that a little bit of a fluke? Does he come back to earth in this start too? So you have to take that into account as well.
Yeah, I think when you looked at his numbers too, I mean, we've talked about it with him, where you talked about a 3.14 ERA for his season up to this point, but a 3.58 expected fielding independent. So, like, room for some regression there, but not to the point where it's, I think, like, jump on it and fade it. And here's the other part about it. You know, if we're talking, like, just the postseason, and it's a short sample size, only 15 innings and three starts, but he's actually been getting a little unlucky. 4.20 ERA, but a 3.54 expected fielding independent.
Yeah.
So he's essentially been the same pitcher in the postseason as he has been throughout the regular season. So don't read too much. If you're looking at an ERA of over 4 in a postseason, I think Valdez is a little vulnerable. If you look at some of the underlying numbers, right, the walks actually fewer this time around in the postseason than he had in the regular season. The strikeouts are down, at least in terms of, you know, the rate in every 9 innings. But still, velocity is almost exactly the same, a little bit lower in terms of the fastball. Pitch values are still there, too. So he's essentially the same guy as you've looked at before. And I do wonder, too, as you look at Morton, you know, I know that you've talked about this a lot. And Morton's got some experience pitching at Minute Maid, so I wonder how that serves him. In terms of,
well, and he knows these Astros hitters well,
right,
too. So he should have the book and all the Astros hitters, but I'm not sure how much it's going to help him in this case.
So,
what bothers me is he has not been that good,
yeah,
in his recent starts.
So really quickly, yes, Astros $1.50 favorite for the series, as you mentioned. So you want to hold off. You get the better price if the Braves do indeed lose here, probably touching around 2-1 or so if they do indeed lose this game. What about World Series MVP? Do you get involved in these markets at all? Because if you look at big picture-wise, Jordan Alvarez, $850, Freddie Freeman, $850. These numbers courtesy of DraftKings. You see those over at BetMGM. A little bit different. Jose Altuve at 9-1. Michael Brantley at 10-1. Jordan Alvarez at 10-1. And then you get to the other guys. And I will say this. You know, if you're looking at some of the big names, the big names actually didn't play that well in, like, the ALCS on the Astro side, right? Altuve had some timely home runs, but Bregman and he were both pretty poor. Like, honestly, if we're looking at, if you believe, like, the Astros, for example, one of the names that had stuck out to me because he's double digits and I just like him as one of my favorite players, Michael Brantley's, like, insanely consistent. Brantley's awesome, good contact hitter. He's going to put the ball out into play. He's going to drive guys in. If we're talking about, like, 10-1, if you believe the Astros are going to win, which is I was kind of leaning toward winning this series, Brantley was the one for me. I know people like to take their shots. I think it was Tim Murray, two athletes, one desk. He's one of the athletes. I think it was Jock Peterson that he bet at 25-1, potentially. I'll double-check on social media. I know you like to take your shots, but for me, Brantley, it's a little chalky, but I wouldn't throw him out at all.
Michael Brantley's 16-1 at the Westgate Super Bowl.
Yeah, see, and so, you can shop around 18-1 over at DraftKings. Yeah, so, like, those are prices that I think with Brantley, that's worth looking at for me.
You definitely got to shop around if you're going to bet this MVP market. Freddie Freeman, that's a fair price to bet MGM at 11-1.
Mm-hmm.
I like Freddie Freeman. I think also if the Braves win this series, I don't necessarily think Max Fried's going to be MVP, but he's going to have to come up big in his two starts if the Braves are going to win it. And he's at 16-1. Maybe you take a look at him. But I think if you said I had to bet one guy, I'd bet Freddie Freeman at 11-1.
Eddie Rosario, I'm sure, is going to get a lot of love as well. But I think I will go with Brantley.
For the record, though,
yeah,
I am not betting it. Are you betting the MVP?
No, especially in baseball, man. Like I thought it was like last year that you could have made a really good case for Max Muncy to win MVP, and ultimately he doesn't do it. You know what I mean? He had a great series last year.
It was
in the World Series.
Corey Seager, right?
Yeah, it was Corey Seager. So, you know, it tends to be timely hitting in big moments, and we do this all the time in championship games and series and whatnot, all right? And it's also, baseball's a little bit different because there's no dominant one star that swings, you know, the pendulum in one direction like an NFL quarterback or a wing player in the NBA.
Okay, a couple times Tom Brady's won Super Bowl MVP when it was obvious one of his teammates deserved it.
Yes. Namely, how about the DB who picked off the ball that won the game?
But don't have that bias in baseball because it's not going to mostly go to the quarterback and it's not mostly going to go to the pitcher. It's pretty much wide open.
So Tom Brady, that year that he won MVP that he should not have, it was against the Seattle Seahawks, who were in action last night against the New Orleans Saints.
Turned out well, but it was not without a sweat.
No, it wasn't. And a little bit of anger, I know, on your part and kind of mine as well. The end of that game. 13-10 final score for the Seattle Seahawks last night, who lose at home to the New Orleans Saints. But there was quite the sweat at the end as the New Orleans Saints, out of nowhere, after just missed kicks and awful game planning and everything between these two teams, all of a sudden get down to the Seattle 19 and then get a first and goal on the 6-yard line with 3:01 left to go, thinking, okay, here we go. It's a 10-10 game. You and I both went 5 and 4.5 respectively. I had 4.5, you had 5. And contest plays, too, right?
If they lost by 7, didn't matter if you got the best number or not.
Right.
You were going down. We're just fortunate Jameis Winston couldn't get the ball in the end zone, and the play calling was not great for the Saints down there inside the 10. The Seahawks missed two field goals and also jumped off sides on a field goal attempt when the Saints had an opportunity to win the game 13-10 or take the lead. How do you jump offside on that field goal attempt? That is just a idiotic play. Anyway, we escaped, and I believe the Seahawks were the right side last night, catching more than a field goal, losing 13-10. I saw a couple people on Twitter complaining about their bad beat on the Saints. Get real.
Stop.
No, come on.
Stop. Did you watch the game? Just because you lose something doesn't mean it's a bad beat. Get out of here. It's been the one of the most overused terms since sports betting has become mainstream. Not everything's a bad beat because you lose it. By the way, how about the late move? SunSpots closed 6 in favor of New Orleans last night.
I mean, I thought I was getting the best number of 5. It's crazy, you know, in these primetime games, the favorites typically get bet up, so sometimes you got to be careful about not betting the dog too early.
Yep. So the Seattle Seahawks fall to, how about this, 0-2 without Russell Wilson as their starting quarterback, but 2-0 against the spread, and they've covered 3 out of the 4.
That's what matters, man. Geno Smith might not be winning games, he's covering spreads, and he's a sportsbook MVP.
That's
Geno
right.
Smith actually played decent last night. The Seahawks, I know their plan was to run the ball. Pete Carroll said, we're going to pound the rock. But if your offensive line's not great at run blocking and you can't run the ball, you're kind of screwed. And that was the Seahawks' case last night. They're lucky they got the one big play to DK Metcalf.
I think it was 8 total sacks for the Saints going into last night and 5 in the game itself. Yeah, it was not a great showing for the offensive line of the Seattle Seahawks. All right, we'll come back. We actually have a pretty good card. It's a short one, but a solid one in the association later tonight. Maybe some questions to be answered. Had a wild move in the market as well in one of these totals. So we'll do all that and more when we return here on The Edge.
This is The Edge on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Hey, make this your best football betting season ever. Start your VSIN free trial today to get full access to our sports betting experts, including 24/7 video streaming, daily best bet emails, and more. VSIN.com is where you find all your data and analysis. You get everything VSIN has to offer for only $22 per month. Sign up now, VSIN.com/subscribe. And don't forget vsin.com/JVT, where you can find all the NBA content.
By the way, the answer to your off-air question, we were talking about something people don't care about, but it looks like the buyout for Arroyo would be 75% of his remaining salary at the time. So,
talking about UNLV football coach Marcus Arroyo, who I read a column in The Athletic today about coaches on the hot seat in college football. He's 0-13. I think if you're 0-13, you probably should be on a hot seat. But the sad thing about it is you can be that bad at your job and then get paid $5 million to walk out the door. It's a shame, actually, that things work that way. But
hey, man, some of the most successful people in the world are awful at their job.
I know. We're going to hear from Mike Tomlin later in the show. Mike Tomlin is he's thrilled about being mentioned as a candidate for the USC job.
And like I've mentioned many times on these airwaves, my dream one day is to be bad at my job and get paid millions of dollars. So I'm really hoping the hard work pays off at some point. All right, NBA. Last night, deep slate, interesting night. We'll get to, because I was part of the best bets that I had yesterday. We'll get to the Bulls. We're now 4-0 straight up and against the spread as well after what they did yesterday.
Was that a bad beat? By the way, you had the Raptors plus 2.5 in a game last night.
It wasn't a bad beat, but I will say, for anybody who didn't watch the end of the game, because I had 2.5, Raptors ended up losing by 3. But what's interesting was the Bulls, because I actually expected to cover, but the Bulls didn't do what you're supposed to do, which is foul when you're up 3. Mm-hmm. They did it for one possession, then it was right, but for some reason, up 3, they're just like, let's defend for 11 seconds. And they let him get a 3-point shot off. It ultimately didn't fall. So, again, I'm amazed that coaches don't do it. When you're up 3, just foul until the clock runs out. You're going to lock yourself into a victory, but the Bulls just didn't want to do it. So, 111-108. I don't think it was a bad beat. It was one more I was watching. I was like, really? You're just not going to foul, huh?
It's kind of a coin flip result at the end of games like that, and you hope it goes your way. That one did not go your way.
No, and I will tell you what, this is bigger picture stuff. The Raptors are going to they have one of the worst half-court offenses in the NBA, and it's not looking like it's going to get much better. So,
well, that game last night went over the total, so you're talking about looking at the Raptors as maybe an under team?
Yeah, they're going to be good defensively, and they're going to be pretty good transition offense, transition defense, but those games that slow down, those half-court possessions, are going to be one of the worst ones in the NBA, and that carries over a couple of years now with Nick Nurse. It just hasn't been it done. They don't really have guys that can finish within 4 feet of the basket. No north-south dudes, no kick-and-shoot guys. their best player is like a 4'11", not really, but Fred VanVleet, like a little tiny point guard, and he gets swallowed up sometimes.
How tall is VanVleet? 6 foot?
Yeah, I think he's like 6'1".
Okay.
I'm going to look at this now.
Well, basketball heights are always exaggerated. He looks to me like he's about 6 foot. 6 foot.
Yeah, huh? 6 foot.
Okay.
Frederick Edmund VanVleet Sr.
Wichita State.
That's right. Anyway, NBA today. Uh-huh. We have quite a few games on the board, interesting and fun ones. Let's start with Philadelphia on the road against New York. How about the Knicks? Knicks losing to the Orlando Magic over the weekend.
Boy, that was a bad loss, man.
It was. After people were storming the streets, screaming into camera, saying the Knicks were back.
Knicks hit 24 three-pointers in the previous game, right?
Yes, and so I wrote about this today in the game notes, and this is going to be the thing. And Aaron Renning, if you remember, who was with us last week, he brought this up with the Knicks. They've been vocal about the fact that we want our offense to be generated from the three-point line, right? Last year, percentage-wise, they were one of the best three-point shooting teams in the NBA, but they were well into the bottom half of the league in terms of frequency of attempts taken from beyond the arc. This year, through three games, 45% of their attempts are coming from beyond the arc.
Really?
Nearly half at this point right now.
Is that Tom Thibodeau's plan?
I
it seems hard for me to believe that he would want his team shooting 45% of its field goals from three.
Right. Like, there's one thing to say we want to be more, like, we want to be more perimeter oriented. It's another thing to go out there and say, chuck it, boys. Like, that's a really big clip. And it's a short sample size, so maybe that regresses. But here's the thing, because if it's not going to, that's going to lead to some high variance, right? Like, we've seen teams like this before. We saw the Rockets experiment with this when they went full small ball, and they were shooting about 45-50 three-point attempts per game. There's going to be nights where you blow up bad teams like the Orlando Magic. Yeah. And there's going to be other nights where the shots aren't falling, like the second game against the Orlando Magic, and you lose to one of the worst teams in the NBA.
Well, that's true, because you really can't explain it, but three-point shooting is contagious. When guys see the balls going in, when the teammates are hitting shots, everybody tends to hit threes. When everybody's bricking shots, it tends to spread throughout the team where everybody's bricking shots. So there are going to be nights, if you shoot that many threes, you're going to have really bad nights.
Yep, and in that game against Orlando, in terms of three-point attempts, 48 three-point attempts in that game against Orlando. They only hit 13 of them, so 27.1%.
13 of 48.
Yeah, so not very
good. It is contagious. It could be for the better or for the worse.
Yep.
That was for the worse. How many threes did the Knicks attempt in the game where they hit 24? I thought it was like 45. Maybe I was wrong.
Let's see. Yeah, 48, 23 or 48 in that first game against the Orlando Magic.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think this is what makes it interesting about short game sample sizes and what you see out of teams in terms of their game plan, right? Clearly, the Knicks' game plan is to shoot three-point shots. So if they're going to continue to do this, this makes the matchup with Philadelphia interesting. Now, Joel Embiid is on the injury report. This is the third consecutive game in which he has been on the injury report. He played in the other two with knee soreness, so keep that in mind as you move forward. But the market is moving steadily toward the New York Knicks, -2, -2.5. From a simple power rating perspective, market's telling you that the Philadelphia 76ers are power rated similarly to the Boston Celtics, who came into this game last Wednesday, right, and lost in double overtime to the New York Knicks. Personally, think the 76ers are rated better than the Boston Celtics. So if Joel Embiid plays, there's going to be some value there on Philly, but the market will react if he does indeed play. So here's the thing that I find pretty interesting, humans. The Sixers, for everything they've done through three games now up to this point, one of the best perimeter defenses so far in the NBA, 33.3% allowed. They are tied for first in terms of frequency of tightly contested three-point shots through three games. So defenders within two to no, like to 0 feet, just getting right in guys' faces along the perimeter. So it kind of ties into what we're talking about here. If the Knicks are going to be content to just chuck in three-point shots, which they have shown they are willing to do over the first three games, I don't think that's a game plan that's going to be very successful here against the Philadelphia 76ers. Right. So I even wrote in today's notes, you know, I actually made this number 76ers -1, but I don't know what's happening with Embiid, so I ultimately did not play it. But it does seem pretty interesting that the market is moving in the direction of New York throughout the day.
Well, if Embiid plays, will you be on the Sixers? Are you going to wait till game time to make that
decision? Oh, yeah. I'm going to see if he's there and, like, we don't get a budge or anything like that, if I can get a number quickly enough when the news is announced, then, yeah, I think I'm going to take my shot with Philadelphia and see if I can get him out there on the floor, because that's going to be really important, right? You obviously want the best player on the floor out there for the Philadelphia 76ers. And you can gamble, right, and go ahead and take the 2, 2.5 now and expect that Embiid's going to be out there. But the NBA is weird, right? Last week we had Drew Holiday listed as probable for a game and ultimately didn't play. So you never, you can gamble, but that's exactly what it is. It's a gamble. So, yeah, leaning really strongly toward Philly, but want to see what's going on from a personnel perspective. The other games on there, Warriors at Thunder. We'll save this, I think, for best bets because I do have a bet on this game. But just to update, it's 9.5 with a total of 224. So we can go to, I think, Lakers at Spurs is pretty fascinating. And I know that you've been interested in the Spurs team in the early part of the season.
Yeah, that was kind of a... I was a little bit discouraged by the 10-point loss to the Bucks over the weekend. I thought the Spurs would put up a better effort than that. And if you look at this Lakers-Spurs matchup tonight, a week ago, what would this number have been? 5.5?
Oh, yeah. Oh, and actually, and it reached the initial market move here was actually 4.5.
Yeah.
And one spot, I think, reached 5, and then it just came crashing down in the other direction. So
I was interested in the Spurs side here, but I've got to get at least 5 points to play it. So, you know, a game like this, I could live bet, too.
Of course. And that's the matchup here, right? When you look at it from the Lakers' perspective, defensively, this is something that I talked about coming into the season, something I wrote about in the NBA guide, and something I noted yet again, not only in the Daily Game Notes, but in Point Spread Weekly this week, which is this team sacrificed defensive personnel, the Lakers, to fit guys around the core that they have. Mm-hmm. So far, the worst half-court defense in the NBA belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. From an overall defensive rating standpoint, through a short stint, we're talking about 112.2 points. Every 100 possessions allowed, that is 24th in the NBA. Oh, so
I ask you this about the Lakers' defense. I feel like when you got a lot of old guys, a lot of veterans, they're not going to be that hungry to play on the defensive end of the floor.
Well, that, but it's also think about the guys that they have, right? It's Carmelo Anthony.
You got a bunch of guys who are scorers.
Right. It's Malik Monk. It's all of these guys who are playing these roles for them that aren't really good defenders.
I think the Lakers are missing a guy like Patrick Beverley, somebody like that who can get after it on the defensive end.
I keep throwing out Eric Gordon, right, as a guy that would fit really well for them. He's a solid shooter, really good defender along the perimeter. And because even look at it from the perspective of
he'd be a good fit.
Yeah. Right. Because if you look at what's been ailing the Lakers, they are giving up a bunch of attempts within 4 feet of the basket, and opponents are shooting over 45% on the corner threes. So what does that tell you? We're talking about driving kick situations where guys are getting blown by. You're either finishing within 4 feet of the basket or kicking out to open shooters, and that's been kind of a problem for them. So I think this Spurs team has been a little undervalued. You and I were both on them against the Nuggets, who have their own issues. We'll talk about it in a second, but I'm with you. Wanted like 5 in this game, ultimately got there for a second, but crashed back down to 2.5, so nothing here. And then you get the Nuggets. They're taking on the Jazz. I think initially 7.5 at the open might surprise some people, but this Nuggets team has some problems, man. Their offense is one of the worst in the NBA. Their bench is atrocious. Mm-hmm. How about this number? When Nikola Jokic leaves the floor, their offensive rating, 89.5.
Oh, that's brutal.
it's disgusting. So they're going to have to figure out some problems here.
By comparison, for people who don't understand, what was the worst offensive rating in the NBA last season?
Ooh, like 103? I think 104 or something.
Yeah. The lowest for any team was like 103. I was going to say around 100. So 89 is pretty bad.
It's abhorrent. So I'm not surprised that this is a number. It's sitting at 7. Initially, there might be some value, but Nuggets got to improve. All right, we'll come back. Mike Tomlin, Bengals, much more in the NFL.
This is The Edge on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back. This segment of The Edge is presented by Zen Nicotine Pouches. Zen working to create a world where you can enjoy life on your own terms. Zen Nicotine Pouches are a smoke-free, spit-free, and hassle-free tobacco alternative that can be enjoyed on the go anywhere and anytime, so you can never miss a minute of the game. Available in 10 varieties, including spearmint, coffee, and citrus. Zen can be found in convenience stores nationwide, so you can find your Zen wherever you are. Zen's nicotine pouches are clean and discreet with no lingering smell. Plus, it's easy to use indoors or out, making it the perfect complement to your everyday. Also, Zen comes in two strengths, so you have control over your nicotine satisfaction. Zen contains nicotine and is only for adult nicotine consumers 21 or older. Learn more, find your local retailer at Zen.com. That's ZYN.com. Warning, this product contains nicotine, and nicotine is an addictive chemical. JVT, do you want some Zen? I brought some in today. Right here, this is wintergreen. Do you want to try it?
Yes.
You can't say no. There you go.
All right.
Put a couple of those in, and it'll give you a kick for the rest of the show.
Okay. All right. Okay. I like it. I got to find my Zen. Much like Mike Tomlin has found his Zen when it comes to coaching the Pittsburgh
Steelers. You get done, throw those over here. I want to try the Zen, too.
All right. Cool. Yeah. Right. I did. There you go.
Thanks.
Regardless.
I went with wintergreen. That's my preferred flavor.
Yeah? What about strength?
You know what? I didn't specify the strength. Oh. So give me the hard stuff.
Okay. I don't know. I'd say 10 years ago, 13 years ago, I'm in. Give me the hard stuff.
Yeah, you used to smoke a pack a day, right?
It wasn't a pack a day.
High school before football practice?
And my lungs were steel, you know what I mean? Just running through the sand, all that stuff. After smoking a pack of Camel Wides, it was the way to go. Anyway, bad. Let's go on from here. Mike Tomlin. Good. Great. Awesome head coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers. He has done a tremendous job.
Never had a losing season.
Never. Now, he's staring one in the face potentially here with Pittsburgh this year. Not really of his own fault, though. The personnel is insanely flawed, especially on the offensive side of the football. So they're taking on the Browns this week. Browns are a 3.5-point favorite, total at 42.5. We'll talk about the bounce back from Cleveland's win on Thursday night over the Denver Broncos. But for some reason, off-the-field stuff has now started to circulate around Mike Tomlin and the Steelers because, according to one report, he's apparently a candidate for the USC job.
You would think if he's a candidate, he's a top candidate.
Right.
Why would he not want the USC job?
You know what, Mike? You tell
let's
us.
Ask him.
Yeah, let's ask him. Mike Tomlin at media availability today. What do you think about your name being thrown out there in the USC circles?
Hey, guys, I don't have time for that speculation. I mean, that's a joke to me. I got one of the best jobs in all of professional sport. Why would I have any interest in coaching college football? That'll be the last time that I address it. And not only today, but moving forward. Never say never, but never. Okay? Anybody else got any questions about any college jobs? There's not a booster with a big enough blank check.
At the end, he says, why don't people ask this to Andy Reid and Sean Payton?
Yeah.
He was ticked off.
How would you've been in press conferences before. Would you follow that up? If he's like, any more questions? Like, yeah, Mike, actually, I got one more over here.
What about the LSU job?
Right, yeah.
would you take that one?
Yeah, look, he's done a really good job. I think it is foolish to assume or even think that he would leave. Right, one of the premier franchises in the National Football League who's had, three coaches over the span of about a billion years.
Hey, if you're a successful NFL head coach who's won a Super Bowl or two, do you want to go to the college level and recruit high school kids?
Right.
No, you don't want to do that. And here's another thing. Mike Tomlin is not the most absurd candidate I've heard mentioned for this job. Did you hear Jeff Fisher?
Oh, I mean, I get the ties, but oh, my God. Why?
I mean, if you're just going to throw out names of guys who played at USC, let's say Keyshawn Johnson's the next USC coach. Carson Palmer. Why Jeff Fisher?
Right.
He was burned out and worthless at the end of his NFL coaching career. Why would he be good at the college level?
Don't ask me. You're talking to one of the biggest anti-Jeff Fisher people out there, especially near the end of his tenure with the Rams. So.
They said August 8th was Jeff Fisher Day, 8-8, right? Because he went 8-8 every year. I thought Jeff Fisher Day should be April 12th, 4-12.
I thought it should have been July 9th because I think 7-9 is more fitting for him. We don't want no 7-9 bull.
And I'm getting a kick from these Zen nicotine pouches, dude.
Yeah, you're finding your Zen.
How many did you put in?
About 4.
You did?
Yeah.
I only put 2 in. That's 2's enough.
Anyway, so what do you make of Pittsburgh here in the spot against Cleveland? Because you and I talked about this on opening lines, right, that the market was obviously way too low on everything that was going on with the Browns on Thursday, right? They win the game by 3. Sure. They're in control most of the game anyway. You can make the argument they probably should have won by more, if not for drop passes and some flubs in terms of management with that contest. So now we're talking about the hook being added here. This opened 3. Now we're talking about 3.5 for Cleveland in a division game against the Pittsburgh Steelers with a total of 42.5. I've got really nothing on this game. I thought if this was going to move under that 3, that Cleveland would be a viable option in terms of a play, but ultimately that's not going to be the case. This is not going to get under that 3, I would assume, and we're going to sit at 3.5 all week.
Okay, I'll ask you this. What was the line when the Browns hosted the Cardinals?
That's a good point, and it was 3. 3.5.
So are the Steelers on par with the Cardinals? Hell no.
No.
Not even close. But you could say there's an adjustment from Baker Mayfield to Case Keenum.
Yeah, I think
you and I are not buying into, because I think the Browns with Case Keenum are not a downgrade from a beat-up Baker Mayfield. So I think 3.5, actually, there were 3s out here at a couple of spots. I thought 3 was cheap on the Browns, and 3.5 might still be cheap.
Okay.
And I know you agree that Big Ben is not a good matchup for that Browns defensive front because he's just not mobile at this point.
Yep. Oh, and he's been terrible under pressure for this season as well. That's going to be another big part of it, which is when you look at what the what the Browns are going to be able to do from a pressure standpoint and what Ben Roethlisberger has had to deal with when it comes to that, right? According to PFF, if you're talking about under pressure, Ben Roethlisberger this season, one touchdown, three interceptions, 4.7 yards per attempt, eight turnover-worthy plays, and a PFF grade of 28.2. It's on a scale of...
That's not good. There's only one rookie quarterback that's got a Pro Football Focus grade above 60. You know who it is?
That would be Mac Jones.
Mac Jones.
That's right. Yep. Oh, yeah. Mac's our guy. Mac's been absolutely fantastic. Do you know who... He's in the AFC North, and I brought this up, so hopefully you remember this. Do you know who the best quarterback is against the blitz?
Let's see. Against the blitz, I'm going to go with it's not Josh Allen.
No.
It's not Joe Burrow, is it?
It's Joe Burrow. Oh, okay. He's in the AFC North. Burrow. Yeah, Joe Burrow's all been right. Absolutely fantastic. Joe Burrow and the Bengals, who – and this is the thing. So I, in our NFL guide, full disclosure – actually went under their win total, and a lot of it would stem from the defense, right? I think in our NFL guide, I do have a season-long prop at over 4,000 yards for him passing. Mm-hmm. I think it's 4,200. I'll have to go back and double-check. And if you look at it from a personnel standpoint, there was no doubting that this offense actually was supposed to be really solid and competitive. The defense has been the bright light for this Bengals team. Like, they've been a lot better than I think expected, and I know that you were looking at some of these numbers. Like, they've been absolutely fantastic.
They have been. Do the numbers. The Bengals defense, I think, has been much better than anyone expected. Fifth in the NFL in scoring, 18.3 points a game. 10th in yards allowed, 339 a game. I know most people thought, even guys who get deep into analytics, thought the Bengals were going to have a bottom five defense this season. It's top 10 in both those categories right now. So it's not just Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase, and the offense. We got to play complimentary football, and the defense has stepped up big time for the Bengals, who are 5-2 and lead the AFC North. BetMGM's season win total for the Bengals was 6.5, shaded under -125.
That's incredible.
South Point odds to win the AFC North for the Bengals, 25-1. I saw 20-1 at Circa, 28-1 at Westgate. So it was all around that number. Right now, the Bengals in first place in that division.
They've been great, man. And if you look at some of the other, you talk about like metrics and everything. I was going through for Points Spread Weekly, running the piece that I was, going through some of the EPA numbers, right, the expected points added. And NF Elo is one of the sites in which you can go look at some of those.
Yeah.
And if you talk about like the net, you know, EPA all around, they have tiers, right, on a graph. And there's like, you know, best of all time, Super Bowl contender, playoff contender, and then like average. Bengals are right there in playoff contender if you look at them statistically up to this point. The offense is clearly up there, but the defense is
Well, their schedule's going to get tougher, too. Yeah. So, you know, when a team like this starts to get national media hype, you expect a little bit of regression. You see it in college every week when a team pulls a big upset. They're going to be in a fade spot the next week. Well, the Bengals not in a fade spot this week.
Yeah. Well, no.
After playing the Jets, the schedule is Browns, Raiders, Steelers, Chargers, Niners, and they finished the final 3 weeks of the season against the Ravens, Chiefs, and Browns. So the schedule's going to get a lot tougher, but this week is kind of like a bye.
Yes, as a 9.5, 10-point favorite over the Jets that will not
actually
have
Zach Wilson. Actually, that number is up to 10 and 10.5 today. There's been a little bit move up today in the market on the Bengals.
Right. I mean, and when you go through, and it's funny, so the schedule's going to get tougher, but if you look at it, like, really, I mean, you're talking about by the time we get to that third column when you're taking on the likes of the Chargers, but after that, I mean, 49ers, Broncos, Chiefs, the way that they've been playing lately?
You got to expect, you know, Chiefs are going to rally at some point, maybe get it together and make a run. You don't think the Chiefs... Huh?
Do they?
Yeah, well, in the AFC West, I think they're still going to have a shot to win it. The Raiders, the Chargers, not going to run away with that division, I don't believe. If you look at those teams' schedules, I don't think they're going to run away with it. Now, I don't believe the Chiefs are any threat to do anything, really, when they get to the playoffs. The defense is a debacle, and that I don't really see how that's going to change.
A hound's breakfast, if you will.
Yeah.
All right, we have plenty left to get to. We'll come back and recap Best Bets and more here on The Edge.
This is The Edge on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
And hey, before you make your next bet, be sure to visit VSiN.com. Check the current betting splits data. This new feature gives you insights where the money and bets are moving for every game. You can be able to see where the public is betting based on the number of tickets and where the money doesn't match the public opinion. Data is available for Moneyline, Over, Under, and Against the Spread bets. Betting splits another way. VSiN's here to make you a smarter, better year-round. Check out today's betting splits for every game at VSiN.com. All right, Matt Eubanks. Best bets. We start in the National Football League as a recap. Week 7 all over with, as are our best bets. And you and I both had the same bet from last night.
It was lucky number 7, too. Week 7 was a good week for us. You went 5-0 in point spread weekly, and right here on the show, I believe 6-0.
Yeah, and 5-0 in the contest play, too, so that's good. And, by the way, that's a good thing, too, 5-0 at the start of a new contest bracket, right, mini contest in the Westgate Super Contest, so...
Oh, was it the first week?
Yep, first week. So
JVP's tied life. For the lead there's in the mini contest.
Me and 100 right. other entrants went 5-0. if you look at the recap really quickly, Saints plus 4.5 against, or excuse me, Seahawks plus 4.5 against the Saints. Then the Colts, the Bengals, two teasers, and the Browns on Thursday. So like you said, lucky number 7. Good to get back at that over 500, 16-12 for the year. And for next week in week 8, so far, just one teaser, a mistake made on this teaser. A good play on one side, but a mistake made on the other. I didn't think the market would get to 2.5 for Dallas, but it did. So I jumped in a little early with Minnesota. Still feel fine, though, teasing that 1.5 up to 7.5. Colts plus 7.5, jumped on that when it was 1.5. Those are ones across the board in favor of the Tennessee Titans. So got a teaser in for next week already. There'll be more plays to be added to.
All right. I've actually got plays on both of those teams, but straight bets. I did not tease them this week. And actually recap what I did. I was, I believe, 4-0 for the week. We both had the Seahawks last night, right? So that was a winner, and that's 16-10 for the season. But moving on to this week, Colts plus 1.5 against the Titans. And I think that was a play I mentioned this morning with Mitch and Paul on Follow the Money. And at that point, Al Circus still got 1.5.
Yeah,
so
right? Yep.
You can still grab plus 1.5 on the Colts out there. Patriots plus 5.5 against the Chargers. I wasn't really sure if I wanted to play this yet because I thought it might move to 6.
That's what I'm hoping for.
But I'm not sure it's going to get there. So I'm going to play the Patriots regardless. And I put it up at plus 5.5 today. So I'm going to be – I am on the Colts already. I will be on the Patriots. I don't think that number is dropping from 5.5 to 5. So I'm going to just go wait a little bit, see if it goes to 6. And I don't believe this Vikings number is going to get to 3. Even though people love to bet the Cowboys, I don't think you're going to see a 3 there. That would be an automatic buy signal for a lot of sharp bettors if you got Vikings plus 3. And, you know, I've seen this mentioned on our network and on Twitter that people assume coming off a bye that a team should play better. Like you have extra time to prepare. And you should. A lot of times I think it's the opposite, that the bye week for a team that's on a roll, it disrupts your rhythm and you don't play as well coming out of the bye. We saw last year with the Packers. You know, I've referenced that before. And last year I was on the Bucs in that game in Tampa against the Packers. Packers were rolling into the bye. They came out, played Tampa on the road, and got crushed in Tampa, blown out by the Bucs. I'm not saying the Cowboys are going to get blown out here, but I think it's a decent spot to bet the Vikings. By the way, Kirk Cousins, for all the praise you see and hear about Dak Prescott, Kirk Cousins' numbers are very similar to Dak's.
Yeah, baby.
Yeah.
I'm telling you.
And the Vikings have a top 10 rushing offense. The defense is improving. I think this is a good spot to play the Vikings as home dogs. So we got two home dogs, Vikings, Colts, and one road dog in the Patriots, and probably add a couple more plays by the end of the week. Two college football plays right now. One home dog, Michigan State, plus 4.5. I really think the Spartans and Wolverines have watched every game these teams have played. They're like mirror images to me, and I'm not sure that the Spartans should be getting 4.5 at home. I could see making Michigan a 2.5-point favorite, but I don't think 4.5. I think that's inflation on a Michigan team that's perceived to be better than it is. JVT, we've seen Jim Harbaugh do this in the past where he wins in September and October and he gets into the tough games in November and he can't get it done.
Yep.
You're going to have to cover 4.5 on the road against a good Michigan State team is a lot to ask. I'm taking the Spartans. And also in the Pac-12, Tanner McKee and the Stanford Cardinal lost 2 in a row heading into the bye. I think the bye is a good thing for Stanford because they had a lot of beat-up guys, especially on defense in the secondary. Stanford's going to be in much better health here coming out of the bye. And this Washington offense has been a big disappointment. The Huskies, last time out, were in major jeopardy of losing to Arizona in Tucson.
Yep.
Lucky to escape the upset as 18-point favorites in Tucson. I've had a lower rating on Washington than pretty much anybody else this season. So I think Stanford is in a buy-low spot here at -2. There's a good, really good late-night college football schedule this week.
Yeah, I am. It's the perfect time for my wife and child to go out of town. This is a great time. Great time of year. All right. For me, we're going to go to the NBA really quickly. Got one bet after two yesterday. So we talked earlier in the show, Raptors plus 2.5, ultimately fall by 3. Thought the Bulls played that wrong in terms of the way you defend down the stretch. And Timberwolves lose outright against the New Orleans Pelicans. So season record for the show, at least 6-2. So we'll go to Tuesday today. How about the journey for this one, Newman? So I'm going to go under 223.5 for the Warriors and Thunder matchup. Felt really smart. So this opens really early this morning. I'm up at about 5 a.m. or so. It's 224, right? Go to bet it. It's already 223.5. Bet it under 223.5. It gets to as low as 222 this morning in a lot of shops. 2 hours later, we're up to 225 in multiple shops, including Circa. I think it was Mirage, you know, those shops as well, Boyd. So we've kind of evened out here a little bit. 223 is the prevailing total across the board to give you the handicap here in between these because Warriors have been really good, right? And I toyed with the idea of potentially playing against them, so I'm going to circumvent it in a certain way. Warriors, when Steph Curry has been off the floor, have been really good, plus 2.8 per 100 possessions, but it's been their defense. Defensive rating in those stretches, just 94.4. They're going to be a pretty good defensive team, right? I told you we talked about this last week. Top five team in terms of defensive efficiency a year ago. On the other side, you get one of the worst teams in the NBA. This is a misjudgment of I had them slightly power rated ahead of Houston. Not the case. The Thunder are going to be absolutely abhorrent this year. And if you look at what they've done, offense up to this point, offense rating of 95.3, with their two best players on the court, a net rating of 26.8. But it goes beyond that. When you look at their struggles offensively, they're a half-court team, fourth highest rate of half-court possessions so far this year in terms of the Oklahoma City Thunder running their offense. And while the Warriors like to get up and down the court, actually insanely inefficient, 26th in offensive efficiency in transition. Good defensive team, bad offensive team, slow-paced team also in Oklahoma City. Leads me to going under 223.5. So the initial market move was in my favor, and then all of a sudden it went crazy. But now we're back to like 223, 224, as you can see right there. So,
under. All right. You're off to a good start in the NBA. 6-2 on this show. You were 6-0 going into yesterday, so bounce back tonight.
It always happens. It always happens. At least we got the color-coded numbers and letters back on the show.
I talked to Aaron Renning about his NBA capping here in the first week. He's been on fire.
Yeah.
But I know you talk to him every day, too, so we're going to have him on the Friday show to talk NFL, maybe get an NBA player, too, from him. But he's killing the NBA so far, I can tell you that for sure. Hitting about, let's say, close to 80%.
How about this for the year and for the first week? Because I'm going to start keeping track of this for like a weekly betting report and points per weekly. Favorites up to this point in the NBA season, 31-18 against the spread. Unders, slight edge, 29-20 to the under. This is what's more interesting to me, though. So I mentioned that favorites, 31-18 against the spread, right? 63.3% clip, ATS. Home teams, just 24-25 straight up, 20-29 ATS. So you've had a lot of road favorites. Mm-hmm. You've had a lot of road favorites cashing. But I think it's more interesting. We talk about this all the time in the NFL. But in the NBA, it is holding serve as well that home court and home field just not worth as much as it used to be anymore. So, also, the average total, 223.1 so far through 1 week of the season.
What's the attendance been? You talk about home court advantage. What's the attendance been like at a lot of these NBA games? Because I've watched several. I see a lot of empty seats, but yeah. I don't know if that's accurate throughout the league.
It seems – I haven't seen anything that indicates that it is down, but I will say in some of the prime time, like, for example, Atlanta and Dallas last week, thought you would get a really good crowd. There's like a lot of empty seats just visually in the lower bowl in that game, and that's a pretty big contest. So it does seem – I think really it just comes down to this. It's something we talked about with NFL players. These are professional basketball players who from AAU are playing like three games in one day, traveling left and right, doing everything. These are things that they're used to at this point right now. So it's not the advantage that it was to catch a team coming on the second leg of a back-to-back, right, and take on another team.
Travel's a lot easier.
Right. Well, think about yesterday, right, the Nets and the Wizards. Nets, off of a loss, second leg of a back-to-back. Market's moving against them. What happens? They win by 12 and doesn't really matter.
No, Bradley Beal played. I still think home court advantage is worth more in college hoops.
Yes.
The travel's not as easy for the teams. Plus, I always believe the officials call the game favorable for the home team in most cases. Yep. By the way, we're working on the VSiN College Basketball Betting Guide.
We are.
It's going to be out in about, let's say, a week and a half. I got to talk to Ben Fox at VSiN. I got to make sure that Coach K is not on the cover.
Did you finally see the blue ribbon book?
I'll show you my blue ribbon. My blue ribbon book does not have a cover on it. I ripped the cover off.
The homage to Coach K?
Yeah, that's
I got the digital version.
VSiN cover is not going to be Coach K.
All right.
It's not happening.
Did you get that approved by Greg Peterson?
No.
He is the mastermind behind this whole thing. All right, that does it for us. Yeah, check that out, VSiN.com/subscribe. That's going to be coming up. Still value, of course, in the NHL and NBA guides, too. But that deadline is approaching for us, so the College Hoops guide is going to be fantastic. Every single one of those teams analyzed. Coming up next, Stormy Bonatoni and My Guys in the Desert, VSiN.com/podcast. If you missed any part of this show or your favorite shows here on the network, we'll see you tomorrow.